May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. What, I wonder, must it be like to be a rector in the last 7 months with COVID-19? Does he or she feel a bit like Moses or like Jesus in this morning's stories? Conditions keep changing. Rules are tested, and leadership is lonely and exhausting. For Moses, even God changes God's mind. But who else can Moses turn to? Who else can he depend on? Certainly not the people who wanted a new god of gold, nor his close brother Aaron. Moses asked him, "What did they do to you that you made the calf?" Moses saw that Aaron had let the people run wild. And God tells Moses that he was so furious that he wanted to consume them all, except Moses. So Moses implores God, and Yahweh changes his mind. Amazing. There were consequences for the people, lethal ones, and then there was a plague. God tells Moses to now move on to the land of promise. God says, "I'll send an angel before you, all the way, but I will not go up among you because the people are so stiff-necked." What? No. But that changes things. The people start to calm and show respect. So when Moses went to the special tent to talk with God, the people watched him walk there. And when the cloud came down on it, they got up from whatever they were doing and bowed down. Moses persuades and begs God to go with them. And finally God says, "I will do the very thing that you have asked, for I know you." Note that it is not just know about you, but know you. And it's the same with us, to not only know about God, but to know God, to know Jesus. After all this, Moses could be feeling pretty rattled, and no wonder he needs some further reassurance. So he goes for broke and says, "God, show me your glory, I pray." An impossible request, but Moses needs something. God is not offended. God is not offended when we ask the impossible. But God is wise. So God offers goodness, graciousness, and mercy to whom he chooses. Goodness, graciousness, and mercy. Now the place is very rocky. I've been up Mount Sinai in it, and all the nearby peaks are just rocks. Brown rocks. God plans to put Moses in a cleft in the rocks, pass over Moses, covering him with God's hand, so to speak, so God's face is not visible. Then remove the hand and God's back shall be seen. Very mysterious, and we have no idea what Moses saw or sensed. But it is enough for Moses to know that God will be with him all his life. Lots of people have some kind of experience of the holy, of the sacred, of Jesus or God, but few share it. And I think that's a pity. God comes in many different ways. If you want to have experience of God, or a deeper experience of God, you may need to have a real desire for it. God cannot resist the one who desires ardently, passionately. Moses was passionate. And another person in the Old Testament is Hannah, the future mother of Samuel, desperate for a child. But let me illustrate this desire with a story from India. A villager came to a holy man who was meditating under a tree. I want to see God, he said. Show me how I can experience God. The holy man, typically, said nothing. The good villager returned the next day with the same request, and the next day, and the next. Though he received no reply, till, seeing the perseverance, the holy man said at last to him, "You seem to be a genuine seeker after God. This afternoon, I shall go down to the river for a bath. Meet me there." When the two of them were in the water, the holy man grasped the man's head firmly, pushed it under the water, and held it there for a couple of minutes, while the poor man struggled to get out. After a couple of minutes, he let him go. "Come again to the tree tomorrow," he said. When he came again the next day, the holy man spoke first. "Tell me," he said, "why did you struggle so much while I held your head under the water?" "Because," said the man, "I was gasping for air. Without air, I would have died." Then the holy man smiled and said, "The day you desire God as desperately as you desired air, you will surely find him." It is one reason we do not experience God. We do not desire God passionately enough. We can get along well enough by filling our lives with other things. If you feel you do not have this kind of desire for God, ask for it. This desire too is a gift, a grace from God. Now let's turn to Jesus, our other leader under attack, who is trying to lead people onto God's path and into God's kingdom. Perhaps this is quite pertinent at the moment, with elections here and in the US, with our state leaders under attack, with corruption findings, with different beliefs on where our money should be going. There are the Pharisees of a religious party, loyal to God, and there are the ones loyal to King Herod of a political party, we might say. They have quite different views, but as happens sometimes, they come together to trap this popular new teacher. They want to force him to make a definite statement that could be used in evidence against him, preferably a yes or no answer. They start with flattery. They lay it on thick, smooth as butter. We used to call that sort of person greasy. Oily. And this would only fool someone uncertain of themselves, not Jesus. Then they got to the point, asking, "Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not?" Lawful? The Pharisees made a way of life out of keeping God's laws very strictly. Taxes? Herod partly owed his position of power to being given the supervision of taxation, which hurt Galilee the most and favoured Rome. Jesus knew what they were really up to. He calls for a coin. Now, you may have stopped using cash recently, but the queen is still on our coins. The temple made people change Roman coins into temple coins because then they had no image on them. When they ask, "Is it lawful to pay taxes?" the word "pay" is the word for "give," subtly implying, "This is my money, and so should I generously make a gift of it?" If Jesus said, "Yes, it is lawful," the Pharisees could rouse all the people who regarded Romans as oppressors. If he said, "No, it is not lawful," the Herodians could have grounds for charges of sedition. Holding the coin, Jesus says, "Give to Caesar the things that are his, and to God the things that are God's." The word "give" here is not really different from the first "give," but here it has the sense of give back, render, return, or repay. It's not our gift to give, but it's in return for all God has given us, or for the services that a government provides for us. The secular and the sacred usually each have their own sphere, in this country anyway. The government sphere is limited, and Christians believe it is under God anyway, and we'd like it to be responsible to God. But a sense of this seems to be decreasing, so it is all the more important for us to pray for our country leaders. We are citizens of overlapping spheres. So, to conclude, what do you tell yourself? I tell myself, give to banks, what are the banks? And to church and charities, what is for them? Anglicare is a good charity.